That's the harder part to get to. Most people wouldn't want to even go there. From the Army standpoint, you know, to counter foreign threats, that's where we need to go to operate. Probably the biggest thing with OSINT is the speed, right? I mean, it's really when you start talking near real time.
You're listening to The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm Matt Sanisbert, and I'll be joined in just a moment by Rachel Melling of the Mad Scientist team. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. You can follow us on social media at ArmyMadSci or subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today we're talking with Mr. Sean Nihlis, Director of the Army Open Source Intelligence Office. We'll talk with Mr. Nihlis about what open source intelligence is, how it's collected, and how it's having an impact in current conflicts. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started.
Mr. Nihlis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited today to talk about Army OSINT.
All right. And to get started, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So my name is Sean Nihlis, and I'm the director of the Army OSINT office. And the Army office works for the Army G2 and is responsible for all things related to Army OSINT for the Army. My background is I spent 37 years in the Army, 30 of that as an intelligence professional. And after retiring, I was very passionate and interested in OSINT. And so applied for the job and was hired for the job and been in the job a little over 2 years, trying to continue to push Army OSINT efforts to the forefront and create more collection for the Army.
Well, that's awesome. We're very excited to have you here today. And we've said this word OSINT a lot so far. So can you tell our audience, those out there who may not know, what is OSINT? What does the Army OSINT office do for the Army, for the DOD? And since it's one of the INTs, what does it do for the larger intelligence community?
Yeah, great question. So OSINT is open source intelligence. And so there's a lot usually of confusion between what is open source intelligence versus what is what we call PAI or publicly available information. And so I'll start with that. So there are different estimates throughout the world that changes on a daily basis. But first, it starts with that around 85% of all information that's available out in the world today is publicly available information. So out on the web, out on the internet, that's out there. So if you start with that, most people think of, hey, if I want to know something, right, I Google something. And so you punch in something you want to find out and you Google something. What most people don't know is only about 4% of the internet is what most people spend their time on. Okay, we call it the iceberg example. So that 4% is the iceberg that's above water, right? It looks big, but it's actually not that big when it's compared to what's below. When you start talking about the deep web and the dark web, which is where a lot of nefarious activity takes place, that's the harder part to get to. Most people wouldn't want to even go there. From the Army standpoint, you know, to counter foreign threats, that's where we need to go to operate. And so when you start talking about the environment, that's kind of the environment. When you start talking about open source intelligence, which is a difference from publicly available information or publicly available information research, people call it PAIR. But what you have is, first of all, you have to be an intelligence professional, and you have to be assigned both the mission and the authorities to actually do true collection. And then you have to have an intelligence requirement that's been given to you by your commander that says, hey, I need to know such and such information. And then OSINT, that actual collection effort, goes out on the open web, on the internet, and finds that information and turns that into intelligence, provides that back to the commander. For the Army OSINT office runs the entire program. So that's managing the program, the budgeting, resourcing, provisioning capability, equipping the force to do that. And then the Army, we are tied into the rest of DOD and the greater intelligence community in different venues that we set representing the Army as a member of the intelligence community. So we run the program, everything pretty much from start to finish that's involved in actual collectors across the force. And then again, making sure that we're properly tied into DoD and the intelligence community.
It sounds like the big difference between OSINT and PAI is the fact that an intelligence professional has a collection mission to go out there and collect this information. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is. That's correct. Yeah, you need to have an actual mission, and then you have to have the authorities to be able to do that. You can't just go out and do it on your own.
Okay, and so I guess going off of that, how is OSINT largely collected? What kind of technology is impacting OSINT collection today?
Yeah, a great question. So I'd say there's two critical parts to it. The first part is training. Okay, so most people today know how to operate on the internet. But as I mentioned earlier, when you start talking about the deep and the dark web, the ability to operate in those areas. So the first thing we always start with is training. And so we have a very professional training program that we have. In fact, the Army is the first service to put OSINT training into our Intel Center of Excellence, so in our schoolhouse out at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, to have that. So we have formalized training that starts off with really knowing what you can and can't do. What are the rules, the regulations, the laws, and the authorities to do? To do that. And then once you've had the training, then the Army OSINT office will equip you with sets of what we call tools that will allow you to go out on the internet and actually collect the information that you're looking for. And so again, you have to have specialized training for that. And then there's one more step to it. Everything that you do while you're out there, the Army OSINT office will monitor your online user activity. Okay, that is our way of ensuring to the American people that we're not violating any civil liberties or laws. Again, the Army, we focus on foreign threats to begin with. And so that is our focus. We make sure everything that we do is focused on that, and that whatever an individual collector is collecting on, they actually have the authority and the mission to do that collection.
Yeah. Are you able to talk a little bit about the specific tools that these Intel analysts use to collect OSINT?
Yeah, a little bit. So there's a wide variety of tools. What I would say is there's no one tool that does everything for us, but basically it's a tool to allow you to get to certain places, if you want to call it, or certain areas on the internet. So there is no one tool, and depending on where you operate, and of course the Army has a global footprint, depending on where you operate, different tools will work better for you in different areas. And so that's why we have a suite of tools, we call it the Army OSINT Toolkit, that we have that are approved tools that are available to the force that once properly trained and certified on, they can actually go out and use.
Once the Army goes out and collects, do we control it, or are there any protection measures that are placed on that information once it's collected?
Yes, as soon as we collect it, we have now taken responsibility for owning it. So a couple things we have to do with it. One, we have to collect it, produce it, format it, and then ultimately disseminate it, right? We've got to get it out to the warfighter so the commanders can make informed decisions of what's taking place. Once that happens, the other thing that we do is we're responsible for managing the retaining of that. So there are laws and rules that we have to follow that we do. And so we have a repository for that that's available to the Army, as well as others out there that can get to it. Because again, we're part of the intelligence community where the Army OSINT reporting is made available to everybody.
That's really cool stuff. I'm learning a lot about the OSINT office and OSINT collection here. And I'm glad you made that note about how your office monitors what all the collectors are doing, because, you know, my first thought was we have these intelligence oversight rules that we have to abide by. And when you're out on kind of the open net or the deep web or the dark web, you never know what you're going to find there, whether it's, U.S. citizens or not, you know, when we're compiling things. Most of those channels are pretty much focused towards foreign actors. But you guys, you know, it can be a little blurry there. So that was a good piece of information. And I want to talk about some foreign actors here. So we were talking a lot about the transparent battlefield recently. And we're seeing a lot of this in recent conflicts in Russia and Ukraine and Israel, Hamas. A lot of information coming directly from the battlefield out to open sources, out to the news, on the internet. You can find videos of operations, videos of drones dropping grenades on soldiers, things like that. How are you seeing OSINT being used in these recent conflicts, and can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so clearly, the first thing I'd say is OSINT's been around for quite some time. You know, I just think the amount of information as it continues to grow, as well as probably the biggest thing with OSINT is the speed, right? I mean, it's really when you start talking near real time. So I'll give an example. When the Russians invaded Ukraine, it was a Ukrainian holding a phone recording the tanks physically crossing the border, right? I mean, that you can't get much faster than that as far as reporting goes, that hey, and so that's publicly available information captured by a collector and then published saying, yes, the Russians have actually crossed the border and coming in. So when you start talking about that, I mean, that's the speed is the first thing that kind of jumps out. But again, I'd go back to also the sheer amount of information that is available out there. If almost every person today has a phone in their hand or some type of device in their hand, there's clearly data that's available now to make it, you know, now it's a matter of accessing, getting to it, validating it, because I think that's another critical step. I'd like to talk about that later. And then ultimately disseminating it so that commanders can make appropriate decisions or informed decisions.
Sir, you just mentioned, you know, being able to use OSINT or publicly available information into integrate that into decision making for leaders. And I think that goes nicely into our next question of how can we integrate the specific collection of OSINT into our targeting packages on the battlefield? How can we really integrate that into our operational planning execution?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So a lot of times we discuss that we think OSINT should be the end of first resort, okay? Again, it kind of goes back to that speed thing. But what I would say, especially when you get into targeting, and from my own experience, I highly would discourage anybody from relying only on one intelligence discipline. And so what we talk about is OSINT tipping and queuing other ends, okay? So I'll give another example, aside from what we just said there, right? Then there's other way, you know, when the Russians crossed the border, there are other means that you could use to verify that information, right? Other intelligence disciplines to verify that. But I'll use another one because one of the challenges we run into is deep fakes, myths, and disinformation, right? That's out on the internet as well. So not long after the Russians invaded, there was also a video released of Russians dropping in, right? Airborne force jumping in to Ukraine, okay? Anybody that saw that could have immediately reported that. The good news is we had a very seasoned OSINT collector out there who, when they saw it and started digging into it before they reported it, realized that was actually a video from 2014 and wasn't actually currently taking place. And so, again, while there's a lot of information out there, there's a lot of mis and disinformation. And so I think that's another part that you've got to add into the equation. And again, by having properly trained, certified professional collectors out there doing it, we can try to avoid some of those mistakes or falling for the deep fakes that are out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because we often harp on how much misinformation and disinformation is kind of flooding those channels. I mean, for an OSINT collector, I imagine it's 10 times harder to separate what's true and what's false. So I can only imagine how hard it is for OSINT collectors out there to distinguish between what's reality and what's not. Earlier, you talked about some training that goes on out at Fort Huachuca for the OSINT collectors. Can you delve into that a little bit, give a little bit more detail about how the Army's integrating OSINT into our education, our training, and leader development, and maybe if we're working with any international partners on this?
Yeah, great question. So, so one of the big things that we did is there was a lot of training going on when it comes to OSINT. And so about 2 years ago, at the direction of the Army G2, we consolidated that, brought everybody together, codified what we wanted and what we needed to have in training. And so we built what we call the OSINT basic course. Okay. So that's, and again, that's run through our schoolhouse. A couple of things I would highlight in that. What we did is we expanded on a lot of individual modules that were done in the past. And we also included right up front, really the first full week is focused on, again, the authorities, the laws, the regulations, and of what a collector can and cannot do right up front. So we built that out. At the same time, what we decided to do is that we wanted to make training available to the non-collectors. And so I mentioned publicly available information research. So we wanted to make sure that those who aren't collectors know what they can and cannot do, since they're not true collectors. And so we've done that, and we've incorporated that in all military intelligence courses, again, out at our schoolhouse, so that we're doing both. So that was kind of the big start right from there. The second part of it is I jump back to what we're training in there. The training that we're doing in the OSINT basic course, by the end, the culminating exercise, you're doing actual collection, right? And then I want to kind of take it a little further, because hopefully we'll talk a little bit about modernization today. We also wanted to modernize what we're doing. So while we were the first service to put OSINT into our schoolhouse, we also became one of the first virtual courses in TRADOC, okay? So we our OSINT basic course is now virtual, which means we've eliminated the TDY costs that we have. And then we went one further, and that is that we incorporated our training in a learning management system known as Cyberopolis through the University of Arizona, which is a virtual internet. So we now have a safe training environment in one of the largest virtual internets that exist to go out and do the actual training in, again, so that students can go in, can do a training collection, and if they make mistakes, it's all in a safe environment to be able to do that. So those are the three major things that we accomplished when it comes to that. But we're not done with that. We also have additional training that's available for tools, for our reporting processes. We have training that's available also for leaders that are going to be responsible for OSINT teams. And we're currently building out an advanced course as well. As we do all that, to tie that in, we have invited several other services to join in to our training, as well as other agencies. And then we've taken a lot of that, and we do help train other partners, partner nations that we work with on OSINT as well.
It sounds like we're doing a whole lot with OSINT, and then it's really starting to be integrated into the intelligence community as a whole, but specifically in the Army, and we're trying to help spread that across DoD. And you did mention modernization, and we definitely want to talk about that and how you see the collection and use of OSINT evolving on the battlefield within the next 10 years.
Yeah, if I could, I want to jump back. So I've been talking a lot about the Army program. Please know this, all the services have an OSINT program. All the DoD and IC members all have OSINT programs. All are at probably at different stages or phases, but again, it depends on where you sit and what you need OSINT to do for you. So know that, and then we have multiple forums where we meet on a very regular basis with that group, both DoD and the IC, with several different committees that take place between all of those organizations and subcommittees and working groups. And out of my office, I have representatives that sit on those individual groups. So there's a lot going on across DoD and the IC writ large, not just the Army. I just want you to know, of course, I'm speaking on behalf of the Army of where we are and where we're going. But then jumping in, so you talked about modernization. So recently last year, we had an OSINT strategy that was released. The Army G2 released the Army's OSINT strategy, which really laid out major objectives, the things that we need to get after. So the good news is we've been moving so fast that while that strategy was supposed to go out to 2030, we may have to in the next year or two write another one, because we've really been getting after answering those. So just like I said, on the training side, we wanted to standardize training, put it in our schoolhouse, go virtual, and then be inside a virtual internet training environment. Okay. We've given ourselves 3 to 7 years to do that, and we've done it in about a year and a half. That's just a small part of it. But we're also doing modernization across other fronts that we have. That training, while we're talking about that training, that's really the individual training. We're now starting to work that into collective training, and ultimately that type of capability provided out to the combat training centers. Okay. So now we can really exercise it to do that. From an equipping standpoint, speeding up our process of bringing in new capabilities, a lot of discussion on AI and ML that's out there. How can that help us do our collection better and faster to get it? But the internet changes, right? So as it changes, how can we bring in new tools and get rid of those that don't work anymore, you know, to be quicker and more adaptable for us? The other thing is, because we've consolidated everything at the Army from a cost perspective, you know, for the taxpayer dollars that we do get, we're now buying in bulk. So the Army OSINT office is the primary office of responsibility to procure all of those capabilities for the Army OSINT effort. And by doing that, we can buy in bulk versus individual pricing, and again, save money for everybody. There's other modernization efforts going on as well that we have. I talked about the training side, the tool side. The other thing I would mention is that the one thing that we don't have is an automated reporting process, okay? And so we are just now getting ready to roll that out. We call it our Dissemination and Reporting OSINT Portal, or DROP, that will automate open source intelligence reporting. Right now, it's very ad hoc how we do it, but that's what we're working on right now, with our goal being that an open source intelligence report, so an OSIR is what we call it, that a report should be out in 2 hours or less, okay? And then an open source intelligence report tipper, so just something that just, you know, almost like a spot report that comes out, should be in 30 minutes or less, but automated to do that. And then what that also does is it's automated our data, because there's a lot of discussion on data today, structured data that we can move much faster out to, again, the tactical edge, as well as out to the entire intelligence community, to include our partners.
All right. Well, sir, that all sounds like we're planning a lot for the next 10 years. And I think this has been a really great conversation. I really didn't expect to be talking about the dark web this morning. So I think it's all really fascinating stuff. And I think our audience will really enjoy it. And before we move on to our rapid questions, I just wanted to ask you one last thing. Is there anything else about OSINT that you would like us to know?
I think the one big thing, I just want to remind everybody about the oversight and compliance. So one of the things I didn't hit on is, as we do that, the other thing is the Army OSINT office, we manage all the accounts for those capabilities that we equip the force with. So at any point, if any individual collector does something wrong, or suspected of doing something wrong, we can immediately turn their account off, okay? What typically happens is when something's identified, we give that unit time to address it. We set a time limit, though. Typically, it's up to 10 days, depending on the severity, though that could change the suspected severity. But if we don't get a response, again, we just turn it off. So to me, the big thing is we call it oversight and compliance. There's a lot we do, all the way from the tools that we acquire, what we do. But I just to reassure the American people, you know, our intent is not to collect on U.S. persons. That's not our mission to do that. We have controls in place to be able to monitor what each of our collectors are doing, just to make sure that they're not. And then we just recently started here just a few months ago, what we call self-reporting, which allows an individual collector, if they know that they've done something wrong, or they've done something that could show up of a concern, that they can self-report themselves. And a part of this isn't just from a, hey, we're watching everything you're doing. The other thing is we're trying to learn from it. So if somebody does something and they do something and we think, well, maybe that's an operational security concern that we have, we probably need to capture that and put that out to the rest of the force so people don't do that. Or sometimes what we have is somebody does something that's unique that can help speed up collection. So from a tradecraft side, we want to capture that so we can share that with the rest of the force so everybody gets better. So that's probably the one thing I just wanted to make sure that we did hit on and kind of reinforce to everybody.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to hammer home, because I think there's a perception in the general public that we're watching everything that everybody does, but we have very strict intelligence oversight rules that we have to abide by. There are exceptions to them, but they're very strict exceptions, only in certain circumstances and only for certain time limits. So, and this is something that, you know, there are inspections, they come around, they check our computers, they check our files and everything to make sure that we're not collecting on U.S. persons unless there is one of those exceptions in place. So I think it's a very important point to hammer home here.
Yeah, it's a great point, because I'm inspectable as well. And we do get inspected quite often. That includes not just our online activity that we're doing, but as we talked about, that intelligence that we then retain, the retaining of it has rules that we have to follow as well. And that's inspectable as well to do that. So yeah, thanks for highlighting that.
All right, awesome. So Mr. Nihlus, now we're going to move into our next couple of questions, which are our rapid fire questions that we ask all of our guests on the show. We're going to start off with the first one. What threat or trend keeps you up at night?
I think probably what it is that the internet constantly changes, and we have to make sure that we're adaptable to that change. So I know from the U.S. side, we like to adapt and change, and we're very innovative to do that. But we also have to make sure the laws, regulations, and other things that we follow adapt to that the enemy typically doesn't follow any of those rules. And I want to make sure we follow rules, but I also want to make sure that we don't delay or hinder our collectors to get out there and get after what the bad guys and adversaries are doing to us. Because I think if anybody can see, I mean, there's a lot that's going on the internet.
It's such a big, big space, and it is constantly changing and at rapid paces. And so I think that's something that we've really seen, you know, in the current conflicts of Russia, Ukraine, and Israel, Hamas, how much information has truly impacted those conflicts and will moving forward. And it's, like you said, it's constantly changing. So our next question, what's something about you that most people might not know?
That might be the hardest question that most people might not know. So
it is a tough one.
Well, most people that actually know me know that I'm just a huge hockey fan. That's probably the biggest thing. What most people don't know is that for those that have ever seen the movie Stripes, when that first came out, I thought it was a recruiting video, and I watched it and I joined the Army and served 37 years. So that's probably the thing most people don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty effective.
It did its job. It recruited you.
So who's your team, though, if we're going to talk hockey?
I spent a lot of time in Tampa down there with organizations. So the Tampa Bay Lightning, which unfortunately were eliminated last night. So
sorry I brought it up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Stripes, sir, what is your favorite movie?
Well, that's definitely it. Stripes, without a doubt, is my favorite movie. Because what most people don't know is when I joined the Army, I actually went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, which is where Stripes was filmed. So everything that was in there, I actually went in most of those buildings or did my training in those areas. So yeah, it's definitely Stripes.
Well, that's awesome. And that's a movie that we often hear quotes from repeated throughout our office, that the Stripes was a big hit within the folks that we work with too. So you're not alone there. That's a great pick for a great movie. So Mr. Nihilus, we want to thank you for coming on the show today. One of the things we do with this podcast is not only try to discover new information for the Army, but we try to highlight other parts of the Army that maybe we didn't know about and maybe others didn't. And the Army OSIN office, you guys contacted us, and we had no idea this office existed. And we're very thankful that you did, because this looks like a great mission. You guys look like you're doing a lot of help to the Army, and especially in this time now where there is so much publicly available information, we need folks who can take that and turn that into intelligence, because that's the way the world's moving right now. So we want to thank you for coming on the show today and talking about this great effort that you guys have over at the Army OSIN office.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having us. We're excited to be able to get to do this. I wish my partner could have joined us today. I will say one other thing is, from a recruiting standpoint, it's been easy to recruit people to want to do OSINT, and we're excited about people wanting to come in. You know, this new generation, you know, was born with technology in their hand, and so the ability to just train them on how to properly use tradecraft, follow the rules, regulations, and laws that are out there, and go collect it has definitely made it something that's truly taking off for the Army and the intelligence community real large. So again, I thank you guys so much for having us today.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Sean Nihilus. You can follow us on social media at Army MadSci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.